Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
This podcast is a little bit different from our usual. We're now featuring 8 executives, investors, and researchers who were recently facilitating breakout groups about the quantum future.
Daniel?
I think for us, the first I think we discussed was in how to engage strategic investors is first of all understanding that strategic investors come in quite a spectrum from funds that are very much like a financial investor with the caveat that they have only maybe one corporate investor or one corporate LP, all the way to the corporate funds that are more, let's say, extended M&A arms, extended business development arms, right? And really understanding if you engage with a corporate fund, which part of the spectrum is the fund on? And then really finding for you, for your startup, the right fit within that spectrum. Right? Sometimes it's good to be on a fund that is really business development heavy if you have a good project that works with them. Sometimes you maybe just want to have the money with the strategic upside. So we talked a bit about this kind of right, startups can pivot, but also corporations can pivot. And in this context, what you sometimes see are these orphaned companies, right, orphaned deals who maybe once had a good strategic investor, but maybe they were too over-reliant on that investor. And then essentially, let's say if the corporate shuts down a business or, you know, shuts down a project, that can have some very negative ramifications also on the startup. If your business model and go-to-market, for example, is only focused on that one corporate. We talked a bit about finding the right champion within a CVC, right? Someone who really understands your projects, your problems, can actually help you. We talked about these different stages of engaging with a corporate from early stage in engagements that are tied to innovation money. So things like venture capital, innovation grants, research grants, accelerators, and so on. To the second stage, which would be NRE-based funding, so kind of project-based funding, all the way then through really revenue that's recurring and really comes out of an operating budget. And really understanding when you talk to corporates, what money are we talking about, right? Are we talking research money? Are we talking NRE money? Are we talking recurring revenue? And really understanding this. And then at the very last, I think similar to group one, we talked about this idea of public funding, right? Using public funding to leverage collaboration between startups and larger corporates. Again, with the caveat that it's they are also not super easy to get corporates as a buy-in, right? Someone who's really engaged in a grant application and not just a sponsor. Those were the main points I had. Anyone from the group, please feel free to chime in if you have anything that I missed. Probably I missed a lot, but again, this 2-minute summary of a 45-minute discussion. So
that was great. Thank you, Daniel. Moving on to people skills needed in quantum sort of scale ups. Ilana, your perspectives, please, from your group.
Yeah, sure thing. I'm just finding my notes again. Here we go. So we had a broad conversation identifying a number of the challenges we thought around this area. So, of course, top of the list, shortage of skills, where you have an industry that's exponentially growing, more and more companies being created, but also more and more end users kind of taking interest as well. So how is the rapid growth of the space going to be supported with the skills that are required? Particular questions around training and development, of course, being able to create skill sets and whether that's something that companies can do in-house or whether there's other programs. You know, we had an attendee of an IBM summer school to help support and underpin that. In terms of an interesting one, maybe around covering how do we make sure that we can attract not just the technical expertise, but less technical expertise that would be required to build a successful company and develop the ecosystem more broadly, potentially where people might not recognize where their skill sets can apply. And how can we maybe attract and bring those individuals We also touched on the fact that being in new space, a lot of the expertise is coming from academia, so it's potentially more junior, and navigating the expectations there, and also attracting more experienced industry experience in terms of suggested approaches and solutions, being able to provide training in-house, being able to look to these summer schools and sponsoring those types of things, helping people get ready and adapt that entrepreneurial mindset early. So we talked about some examples of where there've been networks of entrepreneurs in residence, startup programs engaging with academia that had worked really well to help people understand IP, for example, quite early on. Framing impact and framing what the job looks like in a way which more experienced expertise can relate to, so that it's not just quantum spookiness, and being able to have these kind of more bespoke conversations and opportunities. One thing we didn't cover, but I couldn't walk away without saying it, as a challenge is, of course, diversity in the space, so making sure that that's always on everybody's radar as well. Thank you.
Great. When I dipped into your room, I think you were concerned about just using the word quantum, even just to get your executive assistant. I think they were frightened off by just calling it quantum.
Still looking for an EA if anybody can help.
So former Q. Thank you very much, Ilana. That was great. Christopher, to talk about your discussion, please.
Yeah, there was a big focus on, where the hardware was, and even though the topic was software, it's okay. Where's the hardware going to actually be, and which platform is going to be good for what? There's no really concise answer that can be given there. It's highly nuanced. There are a lot of developments, and there's a lot of I think fundamental R more than D. That needs to happen with all of these platforms. Some of the other things that we kind of had to dispel a rumor that, you're not going to need classical computers anymore once we have fault tolerance, which is absolutely bullocks. It's not the case. Let's get rid of that in the large room here. You will still need, for example, if you're processing classical data, if you're going to choose hyperparameters to run a fault tolerant algorithm in one way or another, you still need to do pre-processing. That's going to happen all on a classical computer. You're not going to do also floating point operations pre or post-processing on a quantum computer. That'd be a very expensive way to do that. It'd be silly and slow. There's always going to be, a large classical component. The other thing that's kind of a tandem to this topic is that hybrid algorithms are going to disappear once we have fault tolerance. Well, no, heuristics are still 99% of what we do in most industrial enterprise solutions. So you're going to do heuristics, even using a quantum computer to do a piece of those heuristics, particularly in areas like machine learning that will continue to be important. Because discrete understanding the exact solution to, say, a PDE problem or some other kind of problem like that is, yes, in simulation, a big deal. But many of the problems that we do in compute in industry are not discrete maths problems. That's not what happens. It's a heuristic. So if there's going to be a huge market that's beyond just chemistry simulation or physical system simulation, many body physics or high energy physics or field theory, and simulation is, we can look at the HPC market. It's $40 billion. It's not going to get much more than that. But if we're going to, really promise the industry that it's going to be trillions and trillions of dollars of value, then it has to be other things that are not discrete simulation math that the quantum computers are going to be doing. We believe that there is a great portion of that. But if that's the case, then the corollary with that is it's heuristics. It's not discrete math. And so there are pieces of heuristics that are still going to exist, which means pre-processing of a latent space, post-processing of results is still going to happen, which means classical computing and the classical algorithms to prepare what you're going to run on the quantum computer is going to be a big piece of fault-tolerant solutions in the end. And so that's a big message that I think gets lost in this. People think that general programmable quantum computer, fault tolerant means you do everything on that thing. And that would be like doing everything on a GPU. It's never going to happen. I'll sit here and say that, except in some very isolated and smaller niche markets like simulation that we're all excited about. As physicists, we're excited about, as chemists, we're excited about that. But if you're into, you know, finance predictions and these kind of things, yeah, the Monte Carlo piece will run there. But you're not going to look at a portfolio of stocks on your monitor in superposition. That's not going to happen. So there you go.
No, great, great discussion. You seem to be in there, Christopher. I think that is a really important point, how this architecture is going to come together and how we're going to build that stack or whichever sort of perspective. I think it's going to be really important. And, you know, going back to my first introduction, it was like, well, we're not going to just do everything on a web browser. It's going to start becoming bigger backend computers, mobility devices. You know, this whole architecture is going to change. And when quantum gets thrown into the mix, that's going to change the IT. But more importantly, I think it's going to change the business model and how we operate and that as well. So I think that's really good from what you covered in your section and that here around sort of the what we thought was originally just going to be about the big data, but it's you've covered that architecture in your session. So moving on to group number six, Richard Murray, your discussion was around learning across industry verticals, chem, fintech, and logistics. I guess that builds quite nicely on Christopher's maybe. What was your discussion?
Thanks, Andrew. So another group that had a brief to talk mostly about software and applications and spent most of our time talking about hardware. So let me talk a little bit first about what we did talk about in terms of the software space. So, you know, we heard from one person who was really actively involved in a really strong community in North Africa, you know, working on quantum algorithms using sort of open source platforms and things. And I think partly a lot of the group felt like part of the ingenuity that will come into this space will be through this just huge emerging community of users and developers of quantum algorithms. And I think I'm trying to look through my notes. I think that's pretty much where we ended in terms of application specific stuff. Other than just to say, you know, there are really, a lot of really talented people out there who will solve that problem and apply quantum systems, quantum hardware to new applications. I think then pretty much we came to the same conclusion, saying the hardware needs to move on and that there are a few different approaches towards that materializing. We spent a bunch of time talking about, you know, what the actual landscape, how it might evolve, you know, in the long term. In the short term, we are in a pre-competitive mode at the moment where everything is very collaborative, but the community should get used to what might happen as things become more competitive before quantum computing becomes more mainstream. And that was interesting, you know, a number of different points about standardization and other things like this. So then I think on the majority of the conversation, it was around, you know, how quantum systems will provide value to multiple different verticals. And it was through this view of integrated hardware where maybe you don't even see the keyword, you just see a system providing useful value. And inside of that, there might be, and for sure it will be a hybrid quantum classical device where some very clever quantum person has coded it so that the end user has no knowledge of the fact they're using a quantum computer. It's just being compiled and using subroutines within that system that take advantage of the quantum advantage without anyone outside actually seeing it. So I think we spent a lot of time sort of talking about how that might evolve, which was all really useful. And there was one last point I was going to mention. I think at a geographical level, a lot of discussion around how sort of regions, how important it is for regions and different hardware and software approaches to start more and more to differentiate themselves. So very obvious but important recognition that this is a global community, and that as we all know, because we're all sort of talking to everyone internationally, that makes it incredibly important that as this industry evolves, that each player is careful and can articulate their differentiator in the wider landscape. And what was really interesting for me is to hear how that applies to regions as much as it does to hardware and software. So not sure how much distinct output there was from that. It's a very broad discussion, but really, really interesting just about how the life cycle of quantum will evolve.
No, it's good. I think you touched on a point there, which I think is really important that I've seen in other industries and that as well, is that these new value chains and these new architectures of hardware, software, applications in different sectors, these are global issues. And whether you're UK or a region or a corporate, I think you have to understand where you're going to fit in that new value chain and what the rest of that ecosystem is. So I think it's important as we go through this quantum future, we're going to be learning or trying to get our heads around those things and that as well, which hopefully comes from discussion from your peers in other sectors. So that takes us on. Thank you very much on that. Kai, who was covering government support and what is now required, which I think then overlaps quite nicely to this topic.
Yes, so we were looking at like the challenges for government support, and a large number of the challenges were focused around how can government act as essentially a user, help de-risk the technologies, the quantum technologies by like purchases or other things. And like it was raised that it's like direct government procurement is really tough because like due to like public procurement guidelines, it really needs to sit right at like usable today and value for money and all that. So risky things are difficult to get through. Possible options are defense procurement, which can be more risky, but has the challenge that afterwards you can't shout about the things you have done often because they get under the like banner. And so it doesn't really help like the wider commercialization. And similarly, another option is government as a user in cross-council collaboration, more on the research council area where like the research, like the applied researchers act as the end users. And essentially one first gets it into research space before it moves like on. Then we spoke about that another challenge really is regulation, where engaging with regulators to think about, one example was the Financial Conduct Authority starting to show interest in looking into like the quantum areas, but also in general, something where government can help foster innovation. Like there's this presidential order in the US mandating aviation authorities to like not rely solely on GNSS timing after 2025, which immediately sets the stage. You need other solutions for timing. So helping with regulations like that to get innovation, like open up the markets for innovation. And one challenge which was raised was also the role of the UK in large-scale international projects. Where do we stand with things like Lunar Gateway, but also like large-scale international collaborations on like quantum computing and quantum sensing and other areas? Some suggested approaches in terms of government procurement, there are the examples from the defense space and innovate space like SBI. ARIA, coming up as a new method of government de-risking things, moving quickly to higher TIL levels, which we are all observing with bated breath, like what comes out of that and how can we use that tool? Because I think that might be really interesting in this space. Then also like what quantum has triggered is regional investment plans to government. So essentially looking at how can regions, regions are developing investment plans, which include quantum, how do they build accelerators, other environments where quantum can thrive? So a lot of thinking there, a lot of good ideas coming up. Bilateral funding is something which is quite difficult to negotiate, but might come up as a solution to like create international projects in the future. And one last thing is the standardization, where there's already work going on with NPL in the UK and BSI, but we definitely need an international context in standardization to help quantum to don't have the quantum Babylon coming up, but rather like have the quantum technologies talk to each other. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Kai. Thank you for your group and your discussion there. So, Andy, who was discussing effective corporate engagement and educating them on quantum potential.
Yeah.
What perspective
you So we had a really lively discussion. First of all, there was the observation that we needed coordinated education to educate primarily the end users of the technology, because we tend to see people fall into two camps. They're either really keen to find out about how to actually program Qiskit and actually make the quantum computer work, or to learn about the applications, and the commercial pull is also going to be from those end users. It's interesting to observe that there's a difference in interest between industries. Financial services sector, obviously, you'll literally bite your hand off if you can spell quantum, whereas other industries like insurance have been slower on the uptake. So the excitement and the exponential enthusiasm that's growing around quantum seems to be uneven across different industries. And the challenge is how to make all this sound real without overhyping it, because obviously we risk a serious market disaster if it gets hyped way beyond the expectations at the moment. And we talked quite a lot about how we avoid a quantum winter falling into the well of disillusionment before the technology is ready. And again, it was identifying genuine, tangible milestones, even if they're not particularly impressive, rather than overhyping and overclaiming what can be done and what will be done in the near future. You actually show it by results rather than by what will be coming. And we talked a bit about whether corporations actually need to be engaged now, or whether investors can invest in the technology, kind of build it and they will come. But we agreed that you need that commercial pull at the other end of the tunnel to give the investors the impression that actually there is something worth investing in, because somebody will buy it when the technology is mature enough. And then there's a question about whether there's a difference in enthusiasm for quantum between different geographies. And we observe that it pretty much matches the sort of economic ranking, whether people can actually afford to invest time and energy and money in quantum. But it was very much a space race, and as seen by, for example, Germany buying what wanted to be the first national nation to own their own quantum computer, Angela Merkel being very enthusiastic about it and even appearing at the opening of it at the Fraunhofer Institute the other week. So that's pretty much all we covered, really. Really stimulating conversation there, because really the breadth of people who are involved made it much more interesting than normal discussions I get involved in.
Great. Thank you, Andy. Thanks for the feedback and that from your group.
Now, Najwa Sidki from Quantum Knowledge Networks.
For example, how do we engage users about quantum technologies for things like quantum computing when a quantum computing product doesn't exist yet, and all the education needed still to raise awareness about what quantum can do for all these end users? A discussion on how research is engaged in corporates and, for example, the different mechanisms and collaborations set by the universities or researchers to attract new businesses and corporates and set some collaboration projects and have some use cases for quantum technologies. The funding route was also a key point or key challenge. So are the public funding efforts, for example, for engaging users with research in quantum, but also the private funding and ventures, which play a key role. What people have been very keen on during the conversation as a solution to all the challenges raised for the gaps is seeing more of the education for end users about what quantum can do, and starting these conversations at an early stage. One of the amazing opportunities were for having sorts of programs and schemes of engaging early stage PhD students and researchers with businesses, but also having industrial consortia of end users who will be talking about the value of quantum technologies. So this is a brief summary about what has been discussed, and Rosalind has done an amazing job capturing most of the key points mentioned in the room in more detail.
Chris Irving, security on quantum focus area. You had a small select group in that to start with, but I think you did have some discussion.
Quality, not quantity. No, we had a good discussion. Maybe the couple of key challenges or insights that came up, certainly challenges, many still, and I think it cuts across not just security, but quantum tech, many still just at the stage of figuring out what's possible and when. And we sort of had some suggestions. So like things like this, networking is key. So this is suggested approaches, I guess, to this topic. Continued networking, certainly that startups, SMEs have a key role to play to bridge maybe academics and major industry, because academics can build sort of one of, but that's where they get their key technical paper of. And major industry needs multiple units of that are version controlled that they can go and break and then come back and ask for the next one, sort of thing. So a couple things in there. You're talking cybersecurity, so you're always going to raise the infamous NCSC report. And similarly in the US, the NSA's got a similar report about not recommending it now and their effect on basically innovation in this sector, because it's a shame. I don't think the effect is necessarily what's intended. They have a particular role about, because what they say is seen as endorsement. But there's probably a finer line that they can walk to promote innovation. It's not ready for the limelight, same as post-quantum and other new tools. But the key is right now innovation in this space. And so again, sort of some suggested approaches related to this topic is publishing maybe some key thought leadership, certainly in this space, and it probably applies to quantum computing as well. Getting out, describing succinctly key first use cases. What's the value add to customers? How are they going to use it? What's it going to look like, especially in cyber? And probably the same for quantum computing. Hard to give a tangible sense of what it looks like in my hand when I'm using it, when it's doing something that helps me. Another key challenge that's out there is just a fair apples to apples comparison of the different quantum safe tools. Certainly in academics, there's been this very unhelpful war being waged between quantum and modern crypto people. But in the real world, when sort of solutions are built, they're all just tools in a toolbox, and probably they're going to be combined and layered and this kind of thing. So this still speaks to maybe some key thought leadership in fairly comparing and pointing out both the pros and cons of each tool and how you might layer them. Sort of related was also in terms of the approaches, engaging with some key standards initiatives. It's security again, so just like quantum computing, but even more so, you need to adhere to the key standards, whether it's ETSI or ITUT or FIPS, that kind of thing. And maybe something that gets forgotten a little bit is security assurance providers. It's not just about standards, but it's about putting it in the hands of white hat hackers and making sure that they still can't get into it. And then I captured it down as, but it's a negative, apologies. What new quantum business models and innovative new value change could we explore? I guess I have an open-ended question, because how will sovereign supply chain requirements fit with the global supply chain? In cyber, everyone wants a sovereign solution. And this is going to hinder innovative sort of new value change, certainly across national borders. This is also embedded in sort of export control policies. And increasingly across quantum computing, you've got protectionist policies. Every country, it's been touched on, wants to create the quantum computer and have every other country buy from them and not buy from any other countries. And this is sort of a no-go. So apologies that it's a negative thing, but it's certainly a challenge to get to innovative new value change, figuring out where it was said a couple of times, figure out what you're good at, what others are good at, and maybe break down some of these barriers that are otherwise being thrown up by governments short-sightedly. I think that captures a bit of it.
Yeah, it's a great point you raised at the last bit, because, as I said, I've been working in this space for some time, and whether it's sort of health applications or like electric vehicles, we're seeing it now playing out in the UK of, are we going to have a gigafactory, and where are we going to get the technology from for the batteries or the vehicles? And those are relatively benign bits of technology, and how we get our heads around what we're going to do in this quantum and AI space, I think is a big challenge to, you know, to, because we, I think this is going to be a global collaboration, or it's going to be a global sort of competition sort of type thing. And you've got to understand that as technologists and investors and corporates on how we're going to navigate this space. So it's a good point in that there. Thank you all very much for your participation today. Really like to thank first of all of you for participating. You know, I think hopefully you found from this, it's as much as the other people in the room who've been there having discussions, meeting new people, meeting old friends, and that within the ecosystem. And as I said, thinking in other people's boxes, you know, is really an important point. And we've raised quite a number of topics on that today. Certainly I found in being involved and other participants in these things in the past, you know, you might have an immediate thought of something, oh, that was really interesting, I wanted to go into that in more depth. Also, I found once you've slept on it 24 hours and you get the email tomorrow from us, you think, oh yeah, that will be really interesting to go into this in a different sort of way. So, you know, like the example of the electric vehicles, when we brought a bunch of different corporates together, different investors, different startups together, and in pre-COVID days, we did all that in the Williams Formula One sort of setting. Out of that came some interesting topics around infrastructure and how we took that industry forward. So I'm hoping out of this session, from the different discussion groups and all of you participating, we're going to get some surprising insights or new ideas. So thank you all very much. Thank you to Ilana, to Kai, to Prem for your fantastic your input on that today, and also to the facilitator who've done a great job. So really appreciate that. So thank you to you all, and we look forward to connecting and keeping in touch with you all. So have a good evening, good morning, wherever and that you are. So thank you all very much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.